Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together. What you know, alibiers, welcome to another episode of Pretty Lies and Alibis. I'm Gigi. Hope you're having a great Saturday. It just hit me. I've been home a week and a day, and I'm still recovering from this trial, y'all. Yesterday, I took the longest nap that I've taken probably since I was pregnant, and it was amazing. Then I got up and decided I'm going to spend the evening with my youngest because she was the only one home. The teenager's never home, as you can imagine, and it was amazing. She is such a cool kid. I love every second with her, and she makes me laugh more than any human on this planet. I lucked out in the mom department, hit the kid lottery three times over. Real quick, big thank you to Harry from Alaska for your very generous donation. I appreciate you, my friend. Also, thank you to Carolyn, a dog named Boo, A. Cameron, and Sharon for your donations. Song fact of the day, a sad one. Dave Matthews from the Dave Matthews Band. His sister Anne was murdered by her husband in 1994. The album Under the Table and Dreaming was dedicated to her, and the two big hits that came off that album, Ants Marching and What Would You Say? Ants Marching is such a great song. I love Dave Matthews Band, but Ants Marching is kind of my go-to if I want to feel happy. All right, we're going to talk about Murdoch in just a second. Josh Duggar, been back tracking in the news, trying to find things about cases and people that I was covering before Alec Murdoch and the 6 weeks spent down there. We know Josh Duggar is serving a 12 and a half year sentence at a low security federal prison in Texas for sending and receiving child abuse materials. This man creeps me out on every level. I've never had a good feeling about him, especially after it came out that he had molested some of his sisters and it was swept under the rug by his parents, enabling the person that he has become, I think, in a lot of ways. But the facility he's at, it has a very intensive sex offender treatment program, and that's where he is. But he got in trouble, y'all. He is in the SHU, the hole, the special housing unit, whatever you want to call it, solitary confinement. Why? He was found with a cell phone. The SHU at the prison where he is said to be especially bad. They also added 10 days to his sentence for having the contraband. He's eligible for parole in August of 2032. He's got a hot minute to sit in there and think about how big of a pervert he is. He lost all of his good behavior days as a result of the contraband. Well, what is it like in solitary? Well, it ain't fun. Inmates shower maybe three times a week if they're lucky. Otherwise, you take bird baths from your cell. You can typically change clothes once a week. I bet the boy has got quite the odor. You either get no commissary in the SHU or it's really limited what you can get. You get three meals slid into your slot on your door. That's it. No snacks. No, hey, here, have a cookie. Breakfast, 5:30 a.m. Lunch, 10:30 a.m. And dinner at 4:30 p.m. They are on my Grammys Eat schedule, right? He can get two books off the book cart that comes by every 2 weeks. He gets no in-person visits and can make two calls a month, but they're maxed out at 15 minutes. One thing he can get in the SHU if somebody puts the money on his books as a handheld radio, but the cost of that handheld radio, 129 bones. And get this, you got to crank it 500 times to get an hour of listening time. There's no privacy, and one inmate who spent time in the SHU there told the Hollywood Gossip, you constantly have people walking around looking through the cell door at you like you're an animal in the zoo. Once a week, there's a meeting where all the high-ups talk about everyone in the SHU. Afterwards, they do a walkthrough and view the inmates they just spoke about. It's humiliating. Well, maybe you shouldn't sneak cell phones in prison. He also celebrated his birthday in there, which fell on March 5th. Additionally, nobody in his family that we've seen wished him a happy birthday on social media, but it's not like he would have seen it anywhere because he's in the SHU. His wife, Anna, who is convinced he is going to be released after an appeal, if successful, or if he gets a new trial, she was making that 8-hour drive weekly, for the most part, to visit him. Now might be a little longer before she makes that trip to visit him because a disciplinary hearing could take up to 8 months. So he might want to get comfy in there. Now, the facility was hit with several lawsuits over the last few years, with inmates saying staff failed to meet their basic needs. They were left in solitary for extended periods of time with no hearings for release, and they say they were denied medication and meals. When he's not in the SHU, Josh shares a bunk bed with a toilet sink combo with another inmate. Outdoor time is spent in 20 by 20 cages with two other prisoners. So one thing I've always wondered, how is contraband snuck into prison so easily? Well, people that are out on work release oftentimes will bring things in, or people who go to medical appointments outside the facility sometimes will bring things back. But a lot of times it comes through the prison's officers. So in 2021, two corrections officers from Kansas were charged with smuggling drugs and other contraband into Leavenworth Detention Center in Kansas. The FBI was actually tipped off about the smuggling. So one officer was charged with smuggling methamphetamines, marijuana, and tobacco in exchange for bribe payments. She was charged with conspiring to commit bribery and provide contraband, bribery and providing contraband to an inmate. She faces up to 40 years in prison for that. I need to see if that's happened or if a plea deal has been taken, but the second officer was charged with conspiring to commit bribery and providing contraband, as well as making false statements to federal agents. She was selling, get this, packs of cigarettes to an inmate for $100 a pack. In turn, the inmate sold them for $350 a pack. How do inmates get that much money? I guess it's one of those things where somebody on the outside puts money on books or in the trust account or whatever. The officer was questioned if she ever used Cash App to accept the payments, and she denied having Cash Apps. But guess what she had at one point on her phone? Cash App. After she was confronted, she approached two more inmates about bringing contraband inside, clearly not scared by talking to the feds. She faces up to 10 years in prison. So not only are cell phones used to stay in touch with family in prison, they're often used to coordinate criminal activity from behind bars. And I've seen plenty of videos where prisoners can live stream behind bars. That's how we got all these really cool prison cooking videos that are all over TikTok and online if you care to search them out. How do citizens smuggle things to inmates for visitation? Some people have used their children, including putting things in diapers. So how low can you go? Man, in Kentucky, an inmate who was out of jail on a court-ordered furlough was charged with murder after reportedly bringing a pair of underwear soaked in methadone back to the jail and handing out pieces of said underwear to people in his cell block. One overdosed and died. He caught the murder charge. Another way they do it for drugs is stamps. It's a common way drugs are brought in. They can be melted down. Drugs can be melted down and placed really on anything, including one case where an inmate received a coloring book from his kids. Drugs were melted down, put on all the pages. Now, women, they can smuggle items in through their lady bits, and we'll leave it there. Some other examples have been using dead birds to hide contraband and then throwing them over the prison walls so that when inmates are outside in the yard, they can go find the dead bird and cut it open and get whatever they want, y'all. Whoa. So that's just kind of crazy. All right. So Alec Murdoch, I kind of feel like we're sort of reaching the end of daily coverage. It's been a week. It's been interesting to follow comments and interviews given by the jurors and attorneys and everything else and people that have come forward to speak. But for right now, he's in there for 45 days. There's not going to be a ton of news coming out about him. But if something does happen, I'll always bring it to you here. I have decided I am going to loosely follow the financial trials if there are many. I mean, what he admitted to on the stand, I think, is probably life anyway. So I don't know how much time or money he's going to have to fight all these financial crimes. There's so much of a paper trail. It's not like much is left open to interpretation, it seems, with the financial crimes as opposed to the murders. There was some reasonable doubt that was introduced in the murders, but financials, I don't see it. But his attorney, Jim Griffin, said that he was shocked when the jury reached their verdict so quickly, and he thought that the jury would have a lot to work through, including the fact that there was no murder weapon, they did not find the blood spatter on the clothing, as well as saying the motive. What's his actual motive? A lot of people did not buy the state's theory of motive. Now, I have to say I've been very iffy about that actual motive, but in a week processing and digesting the trial, you know, the family annihilator theory isn't super far-fetched because it oftentimes is a male who doesn't really have a history of violence but can take out half or all of his family due to, like, financial stress, something's about to come out, that kind of thing. I don't know that it's so far-fetched now than it was when I first heard it. Jim Griffin also said that Alec taking the stand was a Hail Mary move to explain the big lie about not being at the kennels and why he stole the money from unsuspecting, vulnerable people, and also to clarify about his drug addiction. Now, just for the stealing and the financial crimes, he's up to like 700 years alone. He's never going to get out. Some people say, why even bother doing these financial crimes? Well, I mean, all those victims deserve a chance for their case to be heard and ruled upon and a sentence imposed, even if obviously he's not a cockroach and lives to be 700. Still, it's just those will be probably served concurrently, and you're just serving everybody's time and what time you got left on this earth. He's 54, so with good health, he could be in there. You know, it's crazy to think he could end up being in prison almost as long, if not as long, as he's been alive. It's insane to think that, I'm sure for him too. But Mark Tinsley, the Beach family attorney, doesn't think Alec will plead anytime soon to the financials because he told Fox News, it'll put him in a position of now having only two more financial crimes to be convicted of where he would end up getting life without parole, which would be a backstop if the murder conviction was ever reversed or remanded for a new trial. So I think they're going to tie him up like a pretzel. That's a good point. You know, I mean, they have filed an appeal or a notice of appeal. And I think a lot of his appealable issues went bye-bye when he took the stand, although some people do feel what the grand jury heard about certain things that ended up not being the case and that indictment was issued based on some of those things might be his best bet. We'll see. I really don't think it matters, right? Because there's so much other evidence that is circumstantial, but as we know, that's real evidence. So a state statute also in South Carolina keeps prosecutors from using his testimony against him in future criminal cases unless he's indicted for perjury. I thought that was interesting. He had 10 days to send that notice of appeal after his conviction, and Dick Harpootlian tweeted on Thursday, today, Jim Griffin and I filed our notice of appeal for Alec Murdoch. This is the next step in the legal process to fight for Alec's constitutional right to a fair trial. He also told CNN last week Alec was not happy with the verdict, but he did expect it. Let me tell you all about our sponsor of the week, Prose. There's no one-size-fits-all solution when it comes to hair care, and that's because your hair and your hair goals are completely unique. My hair is dry and frizzy. I wanted to get rid of these problems. Thanks to my personalized Prose routine, I can honestly say I've never been in more love with my hair. First, Prose asked me for my hair goals, which was smoother hair with color protection. Their in-depth consultation also asks about you as a person. Prose asked me really unexpected things like my age, hair length, do I get split ends, and even my zip code, so that Prose can factor in the environment my hair lives in. Next, Prose analyzed all my answers and handpicked clean ingredients to help me reach my hair goals. I use the Scalp Remedy, Clarifying Cleanse, Color Extending Shampoo, and the Smoothing Solution Volume Building Conditioner. I also use the Boar's Hair Brush that makes my hair super smooth. My hair is completely different, the frizz is gone, and it's so much softer. All their ingredients are sustainably sourced, ethically gathered, and cruelty-free. They're also the first custom beauty brand to go carbon neutral. If you're not 100% positive Pros is the best care hair you've had, they will take the products back, no questions asked. Pros is the key to achieving all your hair goals this year. Take your free in-depth hair consultation and get 15% off your first order today. Go to pros.com/whattheworld. That's pros, PROSE.com/whattheworld. And now it's time for our paid sponsor of the week, Base. The Base Weekender bag is my new go-to for short or long trips. As you guys know, I'm on assignment now covering a trial away from home, and the Weekender bag has so much space, I actually cut down the number of bags I usually carry from 3 to 1. It even has padded space for your laptop. Are you like me and misplace your keys while on vacation? The Weekender bag has a clip inside to make sure you don't lose your keys while traveling. You got dirty clothes or shoes? Not a problem. The Weekender bag has a separate compartment on the bottom that's separate from the main compartment. The material is durable and the shoulder strap is super comfortable even when the bag is full. There's so many little nooks and crannies for all your travel needs. The bag comes in stylish colors, and I chose navy. The Weekender bag was actually created by actress Shay Mitchell, and she really thought of everything a frequent traveler needs. The Weekender bag even fits in the overhead compartment on planes. In fact, I've ordered 2 for my parents for their upcoming cruise after they fell in love with mine. Make your packing more efficient and stylish with the Base Weekender bag. And guess what? Base has over 30,000 five-star reviews. So what are you waiting for? Even better, right now, Base is offering my listeners 15% off your first purchase by visiting basetravel.com/whattheworld. Go to basetravel.com/whattheworld for 15% off your first purchase. That's Base, B-E-I-S, travel.com/whattheworld. Legal analysts say an appeal is unlikely to be successful due to the fact that he took the stand and admitted to financial crimes, which we know carries life in prison anyway. So what's next for him legally? He's set to go on trial August 14th for the wrongful death suit filed by the parents of Mallory Beach. Their attorney, Mark Tinsley, hopes that investigators with the boat crash will be investigated by the Attorney General's office as well. Mr. Tinsley told Fox News Digital, "We think there were a number of things that happened that are worthy of prosecution," which is interesting because if you watch the HBO Max documentary, Joe McCullough said in his interview on there that some DNA went missing, the clothes that Paul had on that night were missing. And you have to consider at that time, this was still when that family had a very strong hold on the legal community there in that area. You have to wonder, right? So speaking of state facilities, we know that he's at the Kirkland intake facility for 45 days. But what are some complaints by South Carolina prisoners in state prisons? According to a 2020 lawsuit, prisoners say no access to sunlight or the outdoors, and at best, weekly access to showers. They also complain of rancid and rotten food, contaminated water, mold, and the denial of showers. In 2021, the ACLU said South Carolina prisoners were suffering severe understaffing with the expansion of the state's prison population. There have been cuts to prison programs and services, including mental and medical services. According to TMZ, Alec is being kept in a single cell alone just because of his notoriety. The section also houses the most dangerous prisons in the entire state of South Carolina. This facility holds all death row prisoners too, by the way. The source also said he is not eating with other inmates. His food is brought to his cell. So you can imagine he's getting very, very limited time outside that cell. Now, another kind of moving on from him, Buster's girlfriend filed 2 police reports this week. The first came after they saw a picture of them behind the blinds of their own home posted on a website. The report said the behavior of certain members of the press have become increasingly unsettling and frightening for her. She did see a reporter looking into the window of her car and also saw members of the press surrounding her home. She said reporters have been knocking on the doors of their neighbors trying to get information about her and Buster. The police report did say Buster has requested not to be listed in the involvements or any subsequent reports due to privacy concerns. And I, look, y'all, everybody has their own opinion about Buster. I until law enforcement gives me a reason to not like the kid, I don't really care to sit here and bash him. But there's a fine line between, I don't even know that you call those people press, because that sounds more paparazzi, right? Just total intrusion of privacy. I mean, if they're standing on a public street, it's kind of fair game, right? I mean, but when you're taking pictures through blinds, that is, to me, a line drawn. And like it or not, they are entitled to privacy in their own home. And maybe as this sort of dies down, they'll be left alone, because there's plenty more to come. There was also, this is very, very interesting, a TikTok video released by two British men who met Paul and his then girlfriend in the Bahamas in 2017. They met at a bar called Senor Frogs and kept in touch with Paul for some time after that. Paul approached them first at that bar and they hit it off. The men also said there was no sign of his alter ego, Timmy, who Paul kind of morphed into after he would get drunk. Paul went behind the bar without permission, by the way, and that's when they took the video. The video actually popped up on their memories in August of 2019, and that's when they posted it. By the way, even though he kept in touch with these two men, Paul never mentioned the boat crash in 2019 that killed Mallory Beach, but he did ask them to take that video down, which shows Paul very much intoxicated at this open-air bar. The message that he sent them, which they provided screenshots of to the media, said, "Me and that girl are no longer dating and are not supposed to have any contact." They say they last talked to Paul through messaging just weeks before the murder. And get this, they only found out about the murder after the Netflix series dropped. One guy was making dinner with his girlfriend, flipping through Netflix, saw a picture of Paul and Morgan's photo, and just was shocked. He called his friend. They both hung up, watched the documentary, and afterwards, he said they called each other and tried to unpack what they had just learned. One of the men told Fox News, "Especially on a TV series documentary, looking at that, you could think Paul was a nasty guy from some of the things that were said and obviously that were done. But from our point of view, the Paul that we knew just seemed like a nice guy. You have such a mixed bag of feelings because you feel so sorry for Mallory's parents and obviously her and Morgan, everything that happened. And then you've got a real sad feeling of Paul being murdered, being shot, supposedly by his father and his mom, too. It was crazy." I bet that is weird, you know, just you keep in touch with somebody for years and years and you don't know about the fatal boat crash. And then you only learn the young man's been murdered after you see a Netflix documentary on. You can't make this stuff up. I have seen the TikTok. I'm not going to post it because it's not mine, but you can Google search that and watch it for yourself. It's very brief. Moving on, Tony Satterfield, the son of Gloria Satterfield, one of the sons who was cheated by Alec Murdoch, he spoke out this week and said on Cuomo. By the way, I'm going to be doing that Tuesday and Wednesday, also talking Lori Vallow, her trial coming up. He says he now wants his mother's body exhumed to be sure there's no foul play involved. However, when asked, he said he does not think the Murdochs had anything to do with her death, but he wants to be sure. The coroner initially requested that case be reopened, saying her death was not reported to the coroner at the time, nor was an autopsy performed. On their death certificate, the manner of death was ruled natural, which is inconsistent with injuries sustained in a trip and fall accident. We know she had skull fractures, broke, I think it was like 15 ribs or some number around there. Prosecutor Creighton Waters told Fox News about Murdoch's crimes as a whole. "There's something that's very unique, but we're committed to looking and going down every single rabbit hole there is in this case because it's important for the system as a whole." And he also said this is a very large investigation with a lot of different angles to it. Look, y'all, I don't think we've seen the half of what this man has done. I think there are victims, financial victims out there that don't even know they've been victims yet. And also, Russell Lafitte, we know that's the Palmetto Bank CEO who was convicted of 6 felonies and up to 30 years in prison in his role for helping Alec move this money around, giving him these big loans. He asked for a new trial back in December, saying that he filed a motion for a new trial in December. But now he's asking for a new trial because Alec took the blame for stealing the money on the stand in the murder trial. he is the first of which I assume is going to be many to take the fall for doing business, dirty business with Alec Murdaugh. The request was filed on March 9th, which was only days after U.S. District Judge said no to a motion that they filed in December for a retrial on different grounds. So in response to that initial December motion, the judge wrote, the defendant does not get a do-over by replacing his first trial team with a new set of lawyers when he was not able to obtain the results he desired. In the motion, Lafitte said the two female jurors that were excused and replaced with alternates after the panel had spent 9 hours deliberating the verdict. One juror needed to leave because she had to take medication that was time sensitive. The also said she was experiencing severe anxiety and was unable to continue performing her duties. In that motion, Lafitte's new legal team argued these two jurors could have been holdouts after they were dismissed. Guess what? The jury convicted him in less than an hour. But at his murder trial, Alec confessed that Lafitte was not involved in the financial crimes, that he alone committed these financial crimes and admitted under oath that he did not conspire with Mr. Lafitte. Alec is quoted in their new filing as saying on the stand, Lafitte never conspired with me to do anything. Whatever was done by me. This is stuff I did. I did these things and they were wrong. Russell Lafitte didn't do anything. You keep talking about stuff I did with Russell, but what I want to let you know is I did this and I'm the one that took people's money and that I shouldn't have taken. And Russell Lafitte was not involved in helping me do that knowingly if he did it. If he did, he did it without knowing it. The filing says in light of Mr. Murdaugh's undisputed sworn testimony that Mr. Lafitte did not participate in a conspiracy and was not knowingly involved in any criminal activity, Mr. Lafitte respectfully requests a new trial. He faces up to 30 years in prison. So what's to come with Murdaugh? Well, lots of financials if he fights them. We have the investigations into the deaths of Gloria Satterfield and Stephen Smith. We have drug charges that Cousin Eddie also caught. The other thing, too, is Fitz News interviewed someone who claims that Alec Murdaugh brutally assaulted her, that she was sex trafficked, and not by Murdaugh specifically, but was provided to a group of people that he was hanging out with on some boys' weekends. It's crazy. And mainstream media has reported that about the escort. I don't really want to go too deep into that until law enforcement says that it's a go. They did give a statement that right now I think they're not going to comment on it, or they're not, I don't know. But man, you know, the thing is this, I think we're going to be learning stuff about this guy till he takes his last breath. I mean, this is so involved, and this guy's been doing this for 20 years. And I think he had so many things going on at one time that he may not even know the enormity of all the illegal stuff he's done. He's probably forgot about all this stuff. It's insane. Next week, y'all, I'm kind of going to jump back into normal. I might see if there's a trial starting on Monday to cover. If not, we'll just do stuff daily as I find things to cover. I will be doing them five days a week next month. So I will be going to Idaho. I will be there for day one of jury selection openings and for the first 2 weeks of the trial before coming home, being home a while, going back. Once my kids get out of school, I may take them with me and just go do some things on the weekends, like go to LA, go to Vegas, go to San Francisco. I don't know. It's pretty close to some great places that would take us all day to fly to. So once they get out of school, if that trial's still going on, I will be hanging out in Idaho for a bit. Can't wait to see some familiar faces and people I've grown to love through this trial. Unfortunately, it takes really, really sad stuff for people to meet. And I always say that's one of the small silver linings of such devastating things, is that you do meet people you never would have met otherwise, and they become huge parts of your life. So, but ultimately, I'm ready for the justice bus to roll up in Boise. Lori, unless she pulls some shenanigans, starts April 3rd. Less than a month. It's here, y'all. So that's it. All right, guys. I'll see you Monday with something new. I will continue doing this life as a lifer. For instance, if there's not much news on Monday currently to report, I'm going to jump right back in that. So stay with me. If you're new to the channel, Just stick around, please. We got lots of stuff coming up. We got the Koberger preliminary hearing in June. I plan to be there for that, hopefully. And so, yeah, we got Letitia Stout coming up later this month. Lots of stuff. Lori and Letitia both, neither one live streamed. So I'm hoping to be able to bring you the latest, at least in Lori's, every night in a summary. So, yeah, it's going to be a busy year for the podcast. I love it. I'm good, busy, not good, idle. All right, guys. Appreciate y'all, all y'all, and we'll see you soon.